For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Okay, we are coming down the final corner here in our study of Colossians. Chapter 4, verses 5 and 6 is our reflection for the evening. And it flows very much from Paul's discussion that we had last week. You'll remember the situation. Paul's in prison, and crying out in his anguish, which I'm sure had to be there at certain points, Paul appeals to his Christian buddies from around the Roman Empire, including these Colossians, to pray for him. But not to pray, God, please make his life a little easier and get him out of jail quickly and this type of thing. But rather, what Paul specifically asks that they pray for him, is that he would have opportunity in the circumstances he found himself in to be effective as a communicator about the cool things about God that he was about, the gospel, the good news. And I think that's really kind of an important way to conclude this letter, because it's this great window into the heart and priorities of Paul. Here's a guy who is in prison, who is suffering, but who realizes he's not in prison and he's not suffering alone, that God's there with him too. And as a result, then he can appeal to God and say, even in my diminished circumstances, you're still God, you still have a purpose for my life, and just give me that insight so that I can understand what the opportunity is that you're providing for me, and that I would have the boldness to enter into that. And so I just think what a great prayer that is. And then we talked last time from Philippians chapter 1, another letter written from the same period, about how God had in fact used Paul in a profound way, even in his diminished capacity, even in chains, that Paul was able to explain the gospel of Christ to these Roman guards who were shackled to him, and that they responded. And they begin to share their faith as well. And so Paul says that even Nero's own household has an active witness for Christ. And so amazing things really did get done. They're not the kind of things you'd expect, but they are the kinds of things that happen because we've got an active God. So what Paul then does is, in appealing to their prayers for him, in these two verses, he's going to turn around and kind of put the lens back on them. The very same things he's asking for prayer about, he really urges and challenges them in. Let's take a look. It says in verse 5, live wisely among those who are not believers and make the most of every opportunity. Same thing he was praying for earlier. Let your conversation be gracious and attractive, so that you will have the right response for each person. And so tonight we talk about the idea of spiritual communication. How do you communicate spiritual things to people? In this context, he has specifically in mind people who have not yet met Christ, but the principles that he brings out in this two-verse paragraph really relate to any kind of meaningful spiritual communication. So we want to break this down a little bit. Think about, what are the real priorities? What do we need to communicate? How do we need to communicate the things of God to one another and to people outside of our community of faith? Let's take a look. The first thing he says is verse 5, live wisely among those who are not believers and make the most of every opportunity. And so here, what is the focus? The focus isn't on a message, so to speak. It's on how you live. And he says, live wisely among those who are not yet believers, that there are opportunities to communicate who you are, what you're about, that come out of just the way that you live your life. And so let's talk about this. What Paul is saying here is that a big part of communication is the part that says, show me what you mean. And a lot of us, I know I'm this way, yesterday, my wife and I were putting together a gas grill, okay? And it came with a 30-page book, okay? I'm lost, man. I don't get it. And, all these terms and diagrams, and it's like, just give me the picture. luckily, cooler minds prevailed and we got the job done. But I'm that kind of person, and a lot of us are this way, where if we leave things in the realm of the abstract, just in the realm of ideas, it's like we don't really get it. But if we can see with our eyes, oh, this is what it's about, well, then that just kind of opens a window of understanding that could not have been there otherwise. And of course, that's just a part of communication. And God's into that, and He has made a very big priority of not just saying what is true, but like in the Old Testament, you know, God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's the God of the Exodus. He's the one who's active, and He's doing things in history. And boy, when you come to the Gospels of the New Testament, nothing could be more true of the ministry of Jesus. Here's a guy who just identified with people. What does it mean to show me what you mean? Well, first, I've got to sort of walk in your shoes a little bit. I've got to understand what does it mean to be about what you're about. And so to live wisely is to live alongside of. I think maybe Christians have forgotten this a little bit over the years. And so we talk about Christendom and church as not a community of believers deeply invested in the broader social fabric of society, but as sort of an institution that's an island of irrelevance far from society. But that's never been God's way. He always wants us to be able to identify with people as a forms of redemptive communication, communication that gets a picture in people's minds of who God is. And so Jesus did life with some very colorful people. And so he would hang out and befriend prostitutes, tax gatherers who were basically traitors against society. Every form of weirdo that you could imagine somehow found their way into Jesus's activity and his family of people. And so, so not just that he hung around with them, but he called them his friends. That he did life together with them. That he related to them in their world. And maybe that's the big part of this. If we're going to live wisely among the people around us, and that wise living is going to provide opportunity to kind of express really in clearer terms what we're about, it means that we need to not say, here we are, over here, come to us. That's just not going to happen. But to move out into the life that people live and to be where people are and to learn how to cultivate friendships in territory that's safe for them, not safe for me. And so there's a little bit of maturity, I think, that comes with this, because I'm a kind of a social retard, I think of social circumstances as awkward for me, and so therefore I become very self-focused. But it is possible over a period of time to begin to trust God with your awkwardness and your insecurities, and to just move into circumstances that may have at a certain point in your life been very uncomfortable for you, and to realize, hey man, the water's not that bad. And that would be an important thing for us to be able to do, is to look around at our life and say, am I just in this rut where I do my things? Everything that I do essentially has at its base what's in it for me. So I go to work and I hang out with my family, and maybe I've got a few hobbies here and there. I got some Christian friends that I hang with. Those are all good things. I'm not disparaging any of them. But if at the end of the day we're able to say to ourselves, and that's pretty much the end of the story, well, we've got a real problem, because that's just not God's thing. That's not God's way. God moves out toward people. He is where people are. He hangs with them. And the whole spectrum of society become his friends. And from this context then of just identifying with people in this way, to be able to then demonstrate in clear terms, when I talk about this thing that I have going with God through Christ, you know, this is how it works itself out. This is what it looks like. And like Jesus, you know, who would identify with the breadth of society, didn't just sit there and hang with them. Oh, he did a lot more. To the lepers, he touched them, it says, which is very interesting. Lepers were considered unclean, as to say that their leprosy was a sign that God was against them, that that there's no place for them in society. They're almost completely rejected, and there are all kinds of superstitions about how leprosy is passed on, stuff like that. And so, you know, lepers were not even supposed to be seen in society. They're off in these little colonies off by themselves. But Jesus went and he was among them. He was with them. And the Bible teaches, the Gospels teach that he would touch them. And what can you imagine? Here's a person who has not known the sensation, the warmth that's expressed, the sense of relationship that comes from being touched for many years, many of these people, ever since that first evidence of leprosy came out. It's like they're out of here. And now here's God, and he's touching them. And he's saying, you're okay with me. I accept you where you are. How powerful that is. Jesus would sit down and he would eat his meals, you know, with tax gatherers. He'd go to their parties. And you know, if anybody's going to be going to hell in the Jewish world, you know, it's the tax gatherer. These are people who are in collusion with Rome. They're bilking their own people and becoming wealthy, and were just universally despised by everyone except God. And so he would pursue them, and he would share time with them and in intimate conditions in their own households. And there are just so many examples of this. I just think it's very important for us to understand that the God of the Bible is the God of go. Go. Get out of what's comfortable. Get out of what is kind of orienting the world around your orbit, and get into the lives of the people who are not at that place of privilege that you are, where you've got this clear access to God. And so that's a really cool thing. Paul says in Titus chapter 2 verse 10, he says, show all good faith so that you will adorn the message of our God and Savior in every respect. I like that, what he's saying there. He's like, you know, whatever you do, it adorns. You know, what does it mean to adorn? I guess that's not a word we use that much, is it? What does it mean? Oh, yeah. Well, it means, you know, to draw attention to, and a kind of to adorn your body with these really, you know, cool clothes. You know, something like that. That would be to adorn my legs, these pants. And he's saying, what we do, how we identify with people and demonstrate concretely the love of God, that adorns the message of the gospel. That communicates the things that are true in ways that people are prepared to hear them. It's kind of like the picture on the gas grill box that enabled me to understand what this thing's supposed to look like. Okay? Now, here's my question. What does it look like for us, for you as an individual, to adorn the gospel in the way you live? And I'm not thinking here about rocket science. I'm not talking about, you know, selling your house and moving into the short north or the bottoms or anything like that necessarily at all. I mean, that's a very distinct possibility. Maybe you ought to think about that. But maybe just like for today, for this week, for the short term, is it possible for you to be the kind of person who says, yes, I can, that's something I can do. I can communicate the character and the love of God in tangible and concrete ways to other people. What would that look like? Here's some thoughts. Maybe if at work we are looking at the people we're working with more as individuals, as people, than as functionaries, that would be helpful. That person in the cubicle next to you is not a function that serves a corporate purpose. Well, they are that functionally, but they are people. And so just to have that habit of being able to say, okay, this is what business is about. We need to talk about that. But, you know, you matter to me too. And what does it look like to begin to cultivate warmth and a relationship with somebody that we may have a functional relationship with? That would be a good way to adorn the gospel. It'd be a great way to demonstrate the love of a personal God. There are things that we can do to do good, that just because God is interested in the well-being of people. What does it look like then for us to, in the name of Christ, just to come alongside and do acts of mercy for people? I'm aware of a number of people, very unassuming people, which is usually the case. People that don't stand up in front of large groups of people and prattle on. But people who are getting a whole lot more done. Because they are deciding on a regular basis to meet dying people in the hospital. And to show them compassion and comfort. And to share with them the hope that they have in Christ. That's a good thing to do. And there are people who are coming alongside troubled schools and offering help in the classroom and tutoring for children after school. And there are people who are befriending single parents who have the burden both of being both parents, of being a full-time wage earner, and then having a child or more children perhaps, and they just don't have the resources to be effective there. And so there are people who are coming alongside and taking roles as big brothers and sisters, things like that. I think that those types of things, and there are so many more that could be considered, ought to be more characteristic of our fellowship than they are. Well, you ought to think about that. But if you are looking for a way of living that demonstrates the love of God, we're going to need to find places just as Jesus did, to go to those places of great need. It's not an accident that he did those things. How about us? We should be thinking about that. That'd be a great discussion in our home groups of how can we stimulate each other outward to these places where people are in true need. And to live as a demonstration of the character of God and his love. The ability to be inclusive in our relationships. To draw other people into our circle of friends, regardless of who they are, what their backgrounds are, what their life circumstances might be. We are extremely isolated. I look around the room. This is a very upper middle class, largely white looking thing. Last I heard, that's not what our city looks like. Are we getting a little bit out of touch? It's very possible that we are. To widen the range of our own personal interests. Now, that's an important form of communication as well. Most people relate things that matter to them to things that they're interested in. Is that true? Hobbies, things like that. I think it's that way. And as we, you know, have that sort of flexibility as people to enter into the things that are of interest to another person, that establishes a base of trust. It enables us to have rapport with one another. And that adorns the gospel. It says, you know, the biggest problem, I think, in most people's minds who are not yet Christians is they don't really get what Christianity is, but they're pretty sure they don't want to be like the ones that they know. And so, you know, if we can show some real flexibility here and take on some interests that other people have, that's a very important way of just demonstrating what it is that we're talking about. You know, many times, Christians are extremely one-dimensional. We're into our thing. And just to have broader interests and in things that are happening in the world, hobbies that connect us with other people, things like that. Well, I just think that's really an important thing to do. I mean, it would be a real drag to come towards the end of your life and look back and you realize, man, I've just basically lived a life of insulation from everybody else. What a drag. Let's not do that. Okay, so there is that element then. There's this communicating through how we live wisely. But then Paul goes on, he says in verse 6, let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for each person. And now he's talking about not just so much what we do, as important as that is, but what we say. And this is, of course, really important. What, you know, he talks about a conversation, having conversation with people. What's in a conversation? You know, conversation is dialogue. To converse, it's not a monologue. It's dialogue. And to live our lives in sort of ongoing, real give and take dialogue between people, that's sort of like the normal way that Christians live their lives. Dialogues back and forth, sharing our lives, sharing our ideas, sharing our discoveries with one another within the context of the Christian community, and absolutely as well, outside that as well. Conversation is dialogue. And there is always, always a basis for dialogue with any human being in the world. And we have way more in common with any human being than we have not in common. And the things that occupy human beings' hearts, whether they know Christ or not, are virtually universal. We have a common core of needs as human beings. We have a need to connect with something that's real and significant and that matters. We have real need for relationship. It doesn't matter who you are. We have a real need to satisfy that nagging sense within our own hearts and our honest moments when we realize I've got a problem with God and I don't know how to resolve it, and I'm thinking that the religious thing I've been trying is not really getting the job done. And there is always a basis to begin engaging people and establishing real dialogue about real life, knowing absolutely that God is in the mix in those discussions, and that this is an opportunity to really, in a give and take sort of way, over a period of time, to be able to make Jesus Christ credible to other people. And we all have that capacity, and we all have those opportunities. Well, one of the things I think that's hard about conversation is distance. And like, for instance, I have a number of friends who live at various places in the world. And one friend in particular who has been living in Southeast Asia for, I don't know, 15, 16 years now. But we have a very significant relationship, and we talk a lot. Well, no, we don't talk a lot. We email a lot. And boy, have we gotten into some trouble over email. It's like he can't see the wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I can't see the shake of the head and what he's saying. And there are all kinds of subtle things about communication that are just totally lost through distance. Man, people have screwed up relationships and all kinds of stuff using email. I just urge you to stay off that poison. Terrible stuff. Just had to get my dig in against technology there. It's not... Okay. But we realize that distance is a factor. And the further we are removed from someone, the more difficult it is to have a real connection with them. And so we need to think about that in the context of conversation. Do we share a common language? You know, it would be a real drag if I was talking to my friend in English and he was, you know, writing back to me in Sundanese, this tribal language that he's become fluent in. And it'd be like, you know, what kind of communication is that? Well, it's not communication at all. It's just words on a page, dots on a screen. And there is a problem, I think, with Christian communicators on this point. Namely, that the language that defines our faith has become something in our culture that there's no longer shared definitions to at all. So if I went to England and I said, you know, I've got something in my boot for you, that would probably be met with a, really? Let's see it. If I said to my next door neighbor, hey, guess what? I got something in my boot for you. I think she would be deeply offended or at least grossed out. Because in England, a boot is a trunk of a car, right? It's not that way here. And so it is that many of the things that we talk about and we think, boy, I'm really communicating now, are really being put into ears that just simply don't understand what we're talking about, and a lot gets lost in translation. Think about some of the most core ideas that we would converse about or dialogue about as Christians. What are some of the terms? What are some of the ideas that are just foundational to what we're all about? Just, what do you think? Shout it out. Salvation! I've been saved! You know, what is salvation anyway? Great Commission. Holiness. Okay, we got the idea going here. That's good. So we realize, you know, even when I say, you know, there's something about my life that I have discovered and that is so sweet, and I have discovered a faith. Now, I have a certain sense of what does that mean. A faith is a body of beliefs for which evidence exists and about which I trust my life, right? In the world around us, when we talk about faith, what does faith mean? It means wishful thinking. It means what you believe against the facts. And so if I was to talk about my faith in our culture without any kind of qualification, I'm not really communicating to very many people at that point. So it's important to be able to use terms that do communicate. And so instead of talking about faith, I think it's better to talk about trust. To trust God is a more accurate way of communicating in our culture than to say that I have faith. Because it doesn't convey this wishful thinking idea. It's all about, I'm taking some steps to put the care of my life in the hands of God. So there's many, many things like that. To be born again. I mean, even Barbra Streisand can sing about that. And she's basically an agnostic Jew. And, you know, and so, which is, I'm not criticizing, I'm just merely saying that the meaning of that term has become completely meaningless. And so it's better, I think, to talk about what does it mean to come alive in a relationship with God. You know, there are lots of things like that, and it's easy to get lost in translation. It's even easier today, because I think today we stand at greater distance from our culture, maybe than at any other point, at least in American history. It really is kind of a post-Christian era that we are living in. And so it's going to be very important in dialogue to recognize that great distance and to work hard at listening and trying to understand people to really establish genuine communication. Here's another problem. The filters that you have in your head and that everyone else has in their head kind of interprets the data, interprets the input that people are receiving. And so if I say, you know, something to a person and maybe my motivations are really good, you know, they may translate that into something very different and walk away with a completely different message. There are indeed preconceptions that affect people's thinking. And so when it becomes apparent, you know, that you've got this thing going with God and it's very important to you, and the people around you sense that, you may sense they are backing away. Why is that? Well, because in their experience, you know, most people have kind of concluded some things about the Christian message based upon past experience that have absolutely nothing to do with the Christian message. They think being a Christian means being nice. They think being a Christian means being a Republican. They think being a Christian means that you don't like certain kinds of people in our society. You know, and there are all kinds of, and I'm not saying that those are accurate perceptions, I hope. But they are real perceptions that people have. And I think it's extremely important for us as communicators to realize when I say, you know, something about what I'm about, to realize I may be really scratching something that's painful in the life of this person that I'm interacting with. I may be kind of touching in an area that is deeply unresolved in their heart. And I may be touching on all kinds of things because, frankly, you know, at the heart of it, when we get into the realm of talking about spiritual things with people, you know, it doesn't get more personal than that, does it? And so just to be aware of these things, to have the sensitivity to listen well and in conversation, and to be able to say, you know, I understand how you feel. I have felt that way myself, and to be able to identify with the kind of reluctance that people will sometimes have, the preconceptions that they have. We need to be able to not monologue, but dialogue. You know, what shapes a person's belief is very important. In talking with people, Christians are not. I have found that it's almost as important to understand how they've come to the beliefs that they have than what those beliefs actually are. And I don't know that it's really possible to have deep communication with another person outside of understanding those things that shape who they are, what they value, what they're about. And here Christians can be, like anyone in the human race, we can be very superficial communicators and think that we're communicating and saying something that in the mind of the person that we're interacting with, that's not a message they're hearing. There's another filter, of course, along the lines of pride and pushback. You know, because the gospel message at the end of the day is pretty threatening. It's good news. That's what the gospel means. Good news. But guess what, guys? The good news presupposes that there's some bad news. And that bad news is that there is something wrong with you that you cannot fix. In all of your ability, and in all of your effort, and in all of the integrity of your character, the Bible says you cannot fix the most fundamental problem in your life. You are alienated from God, and there is nothing you can do to bridge that alienation. You're not like God. And where you stand right now, outside of a relationship with Christ, is you stand right on the ground of self-righteousness. And you are saying to God, I'm going to come before you at some point. We all kind of know that that's true, whether we say it or not. And I'm going to reveal to you my credentials. And I'm sure you'll be impressed. Because I know I am. And the Bible just says, you know, God's not impressed by that. Other people might be impressed by that. God's not impressed by that. See, God says, you know, if you want to come to me on the basis of self-righteousness, it means that you've got to be like me. And we can't do that. In thought, word, and deed, Jesus says. Man, if you're here tonight, it's way too late for you. You already really screwed up. I just want you to know that. And so Christianity then becomes very difficult, I think, in conversation because our pride is pricked. It inevitably hits our pride. And that is really actually the only criteria it takes to become a Christian in the biblical sense, is that we have humbled ourselves to approach God asking for something that we neither deserve nor could secure for ourselves. And that's just not very comfortable, is it? So those are a couple filters. There's more as well. But here's the point that Paul's making. How you involve yourself in conversation really matters a great deal. And so he says, well, we'll get to this here. It's a gracious, attractive, personal, responding to each person, he says. How you communicate, though, really matters. And as Christians, we believe that we have a message that's both true and urgent. Man, I remember watching Stephen Ambrose's thing on D-Day, Band of Brothers. And he's talking about, you know, after these paratroopers landed behind German lines in Normandy, one of the things that they discovered within hours is they had taken over a German foxhole, and all the soldiers in there had been killed, and there was a package inside that foxhole, and that package just happened to contain exhaustive maps of German military placements all over Normandy. Now, thousands and thousands of Allied troops are rushing their way to the beach. And if they're lucky enough to stay alive on that beach and break through into the countryside, they're just wide open to the slaughter of these German troops. And one of these guys, they saw the situation. They realized what they were possessing in their hands and just ran to the closest place he could find to get this information out to the people who were organizing the invasion of D-Day. That's a true message. That's an urgent message. And it is the same kind of thing that we are talking about as Christian communicators. We have an urgent message. Every human being has a finite period of time. And we don't know how finite that time is. Every human being has a finite period of time to engage God on a decision that will affect them forever. That it doesn't get more urgent, I think, than that. And it is a true message. And so that needs to kind of shape the heart of the Christian communicator. We've got the map for D-Day right here. We know what the outcome is going to be. We know what God's about. We know how we can access God. We know how we can be reconciled to God. The people who are hitting the shore, they don't know that. And so there is within the Christian communicator that true sense that it matters how we communicate. And he says that we communicate graciously. Graciously. What does it mean? Well, a gracious communicator is pretty humble. Okay? They're not saying, I've got all the answers. I've got it all together. What about you? They're saying, you know, I'm a trophy of God's mercy. I'm a screwed up person that God has chosen to love. I'm not here trying to convince you of something that I've come to with my piercing intellect and my great powers of insight. I'm here to tell you something that I learned from somebody else. I investigated it. I found it to be true. I trusted it, and it changed my life. That's what it means to be gracious. There's a humility. It's not oppositional. Dialogue is give and take. It's conversation, not with a winner and a loser. Okay? The object of a dialogue is not to win like a debate. The object is to communicate an idea that is so important, but it's an idea that's really rooted in something between the person that we're involving ourselves with and God, not between them and us. And we need to find ways to get ourselves out of the way. You know, this is what I've learned. This is why I've come to believe these things. I'm not here to win an argument with you. I'm just here to say, here's some information. It's so awesome. You really ought to think about this and take it up with God. There's a patient understanding, that long fuse. We were talking a minute ago about preconceptions. You know, to be able to stay in relationship with a person and to just work through the questions that really are there, the reservations that really are there, the motivating factors of their heart that make what you have to say so hard to take, and just to be patient. And I think sometimes, you know, this takes months and sometimes years to establish that kind of interaction with people that's effective. And of course, being gracious means that it's centered on grace. I love you. I accept you. You matter to me, regardless of what you do with what I'm saying. Then he says, let your conversation be attractive. Attractive. So go out and get your hair cut and, you know, make sure you shave. Attractive. You know, what attracted you to Christ? That would be a good question to ask. What was attractive to you? Anybody got a thought on that, an idea? What was attractive to you in the dialogue that was important to bringing you to faith in Christ? Anybody got a thought about that? What do you think, Don? Okay, because you're kind of a scientifically minded person. Evidence mattered to you. It was important that you didn't have to just put your brain on the shelf, but that you could really engage with that and kind of chew on it. I think that's exactly right. It's an important part of the attractiveness of the gospel is that it's believable. Do you have a thought? An optimism about, hey, there really are some answers here. An optimism that there's a better way forward. An optimism that we can know what this is really all about to begin with. I think that's really important. What do you think, Tom? I think that's so often the case is that when we're going through really difficult patches in life and we are met with another person who is prepared to accept us, who understands what we are experiencing and is able to talk us forward with them in trusting Christ. I think that is absolutely true. I think it's very common. What do you think, Trish?
Transparency. Just thinking of the person in my life when I came back to a walk with Christ. They didn't admit they knew it all. And they were very comfortable with sharing their faults and what God's done to change their lives.
Okay, so that's a really great point. Here's a person who, you know, they didn't have it all together and they didn't pretend to. They didn't have all the answers and so they didn't say they did. They were able to say, I don't know, I'm kind of limited in what I know, but here's what I do know. There's just an authenticity about that that's believable and that makes you want to pursue that. I agree with that. Who else has a thought? What do you think, Mike? Yeah, I think that's really important. There's an attractiveness in just be able to say, you know, dude, I'm glad to meet you, and I'm really glad you're in our life. And just to be able to have that kind of open-handed, generous view of other people. So powerful. Boy, never forget what attracted you to Christ. Never forget that, because there is a whole world of people just like you. Dustin, what do you think?
I was saved based on truth, but I wasn't attracted to Christ till I saw his love demonstrated in a family that I had gotten close to. So yeah, that attracted me to him, which started a relationship with him that I didn't have prior to that time.
Yes.
So just seeing his love demonstrated in a way I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
In the context of his people.
Yeah. I remember that. It was, you know, the flowers, they shared their family with you. And like, huh, that's how it works? You know, and just to be able to see that there's something substantial and real in those relationships, that's what it means to have something deep with a person. And is that what God is calling when he's saying, you are my son, my daughter? Awesome. So true. One more.
What was attractive to me is that the people were willing to answer tough questions, you know, because I had objection after objection, and other people that had tried to tell me about God,
yep,
they just like would walk away when I started out, you know, what about the babies and what about, you know, all those right, tough questions, and
yep,
they wouldn't stick in there with me to get to that.
Yep, that's right. So that's kind of like what Don was saying, is credible Christians who could interact in a credible way with the questions that you really did have. You know, what we're trying to say is that to be attractive is to communicate that we're not selling Amway. This is not a pyramid scheme. You know, there's nothing in it for me. I'm just interested in you and what I have come to learn that's important. And here, I guess, you know, this has been said. Are you credible? You know, in terms of how do people view you? They think of you as kind of a narrow person, a judgmental person, a hard to get along with person, a kind of a pain in the butt person. You know, what kind of a person are you? That's going to matter a little bit about being attractive. Because if you're saying God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life, but frankly, I'm a jerk, you know, that there's something lacking in that conversation. Credible. We can grow in our credibility. We don't have to be a jerk forever. I mean, you know, you can be a sort of a reforming jerk. You can be a recovering jerk. But you can be an apologetic jerk. That's probably better still. You know, to be able to engage in real ways with the valuable and legitimate questions that people really do have. That's an aspect of credibility. So to grow in our knowledge base, to understand the things that make up the way that people view the world and how that creates problems for them to process this whole Christ thing. We can do that. We can become better at that. And that makes what we have to say way more attractive because it's credible. And then lastly, he says, let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will be able to have the right response for each person. And I love the way that's translated. Each person. And so there's this element that I'm not talking to the mass of humanity, I'm talking to you. And so the relationship is what's important. To be a spiritual communicator is to be a person who's deeply and profoundly interested in another person so that we are willing to share our own experiences with God. You know, anyone can do that. You don't have to understand that much about the Bible. You don't have to understand, you know, all these, you know, well, what about, you know, how does Genesis fit with evolution, or, you know, all these kind of things. You know, one thing you are absolutely an expert on, you are the leading expert in the world on this point, is your own life. You are an expert. And so you can share in a very authoritative way. Here's my experience. You can do that. And that's personal. You're not saying, I can prove this to you or whatever it is. But you can just say, look, man, this is what I found. This is how I found it. It's really good. How Christ has been made real in your life is an important question. And something that we can share openly with just about anybody. Here's the thing I want to just end on. if we are going to understand what does it mean to effectively dialogue with each person, as he says, we need an answer to this. Does your friend know that you love them? When we have hard things to say, and the gospel, like I said a while ago, that's a hard message. It enables people to hear when they know that you love them. When you are absolutely committed to their best interest and they know it. And this is why I just think it is so very, very important for us. If we are going to be the kind of communicators that Paul describes here, that we are going to have to be able to learn not only to have genuine affection for other people, and for some of us that's very difficult, I realize that, but beyond that, to actually communicate the affection that you have for them. Do you see the difference there? I care deeply for some people, and I mean this honestly. There are some people in my life that I care deeply for who I think would be shocked to know that. How about you? And so, if we're communicating the love of God, we need to be the people who are out there expressing that love in the context of relationship. And I think that when we put these things together, you know, that is something that's very powerful. And we will find that if these are our concerns, that the opportunities that Paul prays about, these will become evident to us. We'll see, because our lens through which we are viewing the world is different, and we will see these opportunities that God brings before us. So those are some closing thoughts on the study of Colossians. We're running out of time. So why don't I close this in prayer and we can get our kids. Lord, just thank you that you were really super patient with us. And that, as Paul says, that while we were alienated from you, distant from you, that you died for us. I do pray, God. I know that those of us who are here and we're kind of searching, and maybe we've been searching for a while, that we know that we sense that it really is true that what we're pushing back with is our pride, that it's a hard thing to think about trusting you when we're so accustomed to trusting ourselves. And yet that is your call. And just to exercise that humility to say, Lord, I know who you are, and I know that I'm far from you. I'm not like you, and in that sense, I'm alienated from you and deserving of your judgment. And I want to trust my life when I come before you and as I live in this world on the basis of your precious gift in Jesus Christ to me. And just to be able to, in a simple way, that kind of prayer, to say, that's the way it is, you're who I'm going to trust, that changes the whole course of our life. And our eternity as well. And it's a wild and amazing and cool message. And I just pray, Lord, that you would help us to be good stewards of that message, good communicators of it, and that that we would be able to, some of us here, be able to say, yeah, I want that for me. Just to seal the deal, just to say, okay, this is the time. Thanks for this study, Lord. Thanks for this awesome book of Colossians. And we just give up our evening to you in Christ's name. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.